Chapter 22. Sal increased the Ford's speed steadily as they climbed the slanted driveway. Clyde had the Tommy gun aimed out the right window. His adrenaline spiked as they hit the top of the driveway and sped around the fountain in a controlled skid. Clyde searched for targets frantically. If he saw them first, he could keep their heads down before they could shred the vehicle. He searched the darkness behind the lit drive but saw no threats. The brick and stone walls provided perfect cover for ambushers, and he expected to see glinting muzzle flashes at any moment, but so far, nothing. Sal straightened the vehicle and accelerated down the long drive. The towering pine trees lining both sides could hide an army of mobsters. The engine whined at high RPMs, and Clyde saw the speedometer hit 50 miles per hour. Sal slammed the brakes as they approached the main road. The vehicle fishtailed, but Sal expertly made the sharp turn onto the road with a slight squeal of tires. Clyde held the door handle to keep from rolling. Sal looked in the rearview mirror and said, "You okay back there?" Clyde righted himself and looked behind them before answering.
"Yeah. I don't see anyone following us."
"I worried about the long driveway. I had to take it at speed."
Clyde rolled up the windows to keep more rainwater from seeping in and soaking the back seat.
"I didn't see anyone."
"Me either."
"Are we overreacting?"
Sal shrugged. "It's a credible threat. Trambolini can be a loose cannon, especially when it comes to family."
"Where'd you learn to drive like that?"
"Part of my job."
"Really? There's a need for it?"
"Victor makes enemies easily, so it's good to be ready."
Clyde held up the sparkling Thompson submachine gun.
"No kidding," he said sarcastically. "What kind of family have I married into?"
"A very rich family with a long history of cutthroat business dealings."
Clyde shook his head in disgust.
"First chance I get, I'm taking Abby and we're moving as far away from this place as possible. You people are crazy."
Sal's face didn't change, but Clyde noticed his eyes in the mirror hardened. Clyde added,
"It's a credit to Abby. I don't know how she came out so normal and perfect."
"Well, you're right about that part," Sal said.
As the urban setting changed to residential and eventually city, Clyde asked, "You remember how to get there?"
"Of course."
Clyde placed the machine gun on the seat and asked, "What do you know about this Trambolini family?"
"The ones out here aren't the main event. They have a much larger presence in New York City. Vincent Trambolini and his family are newcomers. They immigrated from Italy to get out of Mussolini's sights. They greased the bureaucratic wheels to become U.S. citizens quickly, then came out to the Northwest and set up shop with Rodolfo Trambolini's blessing. He's the bigwig, the head of the family in New York."
Stunned by the in-depth information, Clyde asked, "So what are they into? Prostitution? Murder? That sort of thing?" Sal looked at him as though simple.
"Nothing like that. Well, gambling, I suppose. But they're mostly in the garbage industry. Sure, the seed money probably came from stuff like that, but it's easier to run a legitimate business than an illegal one."
"Garbage?" Clyde had read countless crime novels, and the mobsters were always involved in awful degenerate activities, not garbage pickup.
"Yeah, mostly. Don't misunderstand. They can be nasty if you cross them. They know how to handle themselves, and they know how to protect themselves. That's why we're taking this seriously. Family is everything to them, and I killed one of their own. They won't let that kind of thing go."
In the mirror, Clyde noticed Sal flinch at the memory. "Sounds like you didn't have any other choice. They were about to kill an innocent man." Sal nodded.
"Yes, Miles Burr."
Clyde turned from searching behind them.
"Miles Burr? You mean that asshole I met at the party before the war started?"
Sal grinned.
"Yeah, that's the guy."
"Good riddance," Clyde mumbled.
"Can't really disagree with you on that one. He's a prick. He burned his hand when he attacked the gunman, gave me the opening I needed. I didn't think he had it in him. Seems more the type to freeze up and piss himself."
Clyde tried to picture Miles Burr doing anything heroic, but couldn't. He barely knew him, but he knew the type. Soft, probably didn't like to get his hands dirty. Someone who'd been given everything on a silver platter and took full advantage of people to maintain power and prestige. "He was at the gambling hall then," he stated flatly. He felt a knot in his stomach. Was that why Abby was there? To be with him? He hated the feeling in his gut. He'd gone through the toughest training the U.S. Army offered. He was ready to jump out of an airplane behind enemy lines. Ready to fight beside his comrades just as warriors had since the dawn of man. Yet thinking of Abby fawning over Miles Burr at an illegal poker ring turned his insides to jelly. Sal's eyes hardened in the rearview mirror.
We're almost at your apartment. Are you ready?
Clyde snapped out of it. This late, there wasn't much traffic on the streets, and he didn't see any pedestrians.
I don't see anyone. Let me out at the front. I'll go up and get her.
Sal opened the glove compartment and pulled out a small pistol.
Take this instead of the machine gun. It'll attract less attention.
Clyde took the pistol and checked the magazine and the action. Sal watched him closely in the mirror.
You familiar with it?
Familiar enough, yeah.
Good. I'll circle around the block and come back in a couple of minutes. If there's trouble, I won't have my lights on.
Won't have your lights on. Got it. Sal pulled the car toward the curb and slowed down, but didn't stop completely. Clyde opened the door and slid out, gripping the pistol close to his side to keep it hidden. He hurried to the shadows near the apartment lobby and waited. He watched Sal reach the end of the block. The big sedan turned left and went out of view.
This is crazy, he thought. Mrs. Lambert must be scared out of her wits.
He found his keys and unlocked the front door to the complex. He stepped in, trying to look as though nothing was out of the ordinary. He felt ridiculous. He took the four flights of stairs quickly. He fought the urge to aim the pistol up the staircase as he climbed. What if Mr. Hall was out enjoying a cigarette and he came at him with a gun drawn? He'd have the police there in an instant. So he kept the pistol at his side and climbed steadily. When he got to the top, he paused before turning the corner, which would take him to their front door. What if they were dragging her out? He took a deep breath and rounded the corner. Nothing looked out of place. The dim light lit up the hallway. He went to his apartment door and inserted the key into the top deadbolt. It would make the most noise, but he couldn't avoid that. He did it slowly, the feeling of ridiculousness growing. He stepped inside and knew she wasn't there. Good girl. She's at Mrs. Lambert's. He ran into the bedroom just to make sure, then hustled back out the door. He didn't bother closing it. He stuffed the pistol into his waistband. No need to frighten Mrs. Lambert. Before he made it to her door, it opened, and she stuck her head out. Curling irons covered her head, and she looked tired and a little scared.
"Oh, good, it's you," she said, holding her hand to her chest.
"Hello, Mrs. Lambert. I'm here to pick up Abby."
"I'm afraid she's not here, dear."
Clyde's face fell.
Where is she? Did someone take her?"
He couldn't keep the fear out of his voice. Mrs. Lambert gave him a startled look.
"No, nothing like that. She told me to tell you she went to see about her friend Trish."
"Trish? Jesus Christ!" Mrs. Lambert's eyes went wide and Clyde quickly apologized.
"Sorry. Did she leave an address?"
Mrs. Lambert shook her head.
"No, she said she'd be right back."
Clyde strode the last few steps to her and grasped her shoulders. "How long ago?" he asked, desperation mounting.
"Half an hour."
"Did she say anything else?"
"Just that either you or someone named Sal would come here to pick her up, and if anyone else did, not to tell them anything."
"Get back inside, Mrs. Lambert, and don't open the door for anyone." She put a hand to her mouth, her alarm growing. She asked,
"Should I call the police?"
He was already halfway down the hall when he yelled over his shoulder,
"No, not yet."
Clyde could hardly think straight. Images of Abby lying beaten on the floor of the grocery store or in some seedy warehouse made his blood boil. He burst out of the apartment complex with no coherent plan. He ran onto the street. He didn't even know which way Trish lived. He spotted the Ford idling half a block back, and his breath caught in his throat. Darkened headlights. He knew what that meant. He got control of himself. Sal and the Ford. He had to get there. Sal had obviously seen something. Clyde drew the pistol from his waistband and ran straight at the Ford. If someone had a bead on him, he'd die in the street, but he had to know what Sal knew. Sal pulled the Ford out of the parking spot and sped toward him. He screeched the tires as he stopped beside him. He had the window down and he said, "Get in!" Clyde jumped into the back seat and rolled the window down. He swapped the pistol for the Thompson.
"She's not there. She went to warn Trish."
"I know. At least I figured as much. Where is she? Did you see her? Where, damn it? Calm down, soldier, Sal barked, and something responded deep inside Clyde. He clammed up and tried to ease his panic. Sal's voice sounded calm but icy. I saw them being dragged into the front door of the grocery store not more than a minute ago. They had bags over their heads, but it had to be them. Christ, Clyde moaned. I would have left you if you hadn't come down when you did. We've got a much better chance with the two of us. Sal saw Clyde rubbing his forehead as though he had a raging headache. He said, pull yourself together right now. Take the emotion out of it. This is no different than assaulting an enemy position. Clyde stared hard at him. He knew he was right, but this was his wife, not a Nazi machine gun nest. If they screwed this up, he'd never forgive himself. He took a deep breath and blew it out slowly, willing his heartbeat to come under some semblance of control, just the way the army trained him. Sal nodded. Good. There's no easy way to do this. We'll have to go through the front door and take our chances. If they see us, they'll start shooting. What about the back door that you used before? Most likely locked up tight. We don't have time for that. They might be fixing to execute them as we speak. Clyde felt like he'd eaten a hot coal. He wanted to vomit, but he swallowed bitterly. I thought Victor said he didn't operate that way. I don't know what's going on. Maybe they went after Trish and Abby got in the way, he surmised. So we go in guns blazing? Too dangerous. We might hit the girls. Sal pulled smoothly into a parking spot a few doors down from the grocery store. He checked his Tommy gun and said, we'll try to get the jump on them. They both exited the car and slid toward the wall. So far, they hadn't attracted any attention. Clyde thought reinforcements would go a long way right about now. He hoped to see a cop roll by, but reconsidered. That would take too much explaining and might end badly for everyone, including the cops. Clyde noticed a large vehicle across from the grocery store. The engine was off, but he could hear the ticking as it cooled. That's their car, Sal grunted. Yeah, there's no one in it. I already checked. Clyde hustled to where the front windows of the grocery store started. They didn't reach all the way to the ground, so he crouched and moved along until he was at the clear glass of the front door. Sal was right behind him. He had a deadly glint in his eye, and Clyde wondered about his service record in the Great War. Clyde slowed. Once he stepped in front of the double doors, he'd be exposed to anyone looking out from the inside. But he had no other choice. Sal touched his leg and whispered, "Do it quiet." Clyde nodded, took off the safety, and moved forward, staying in a crouch. He didn't see anyone inside, but he saw a light glowing from the back. He pushed gently on the door, praying they hadn't locked it. If they had to bust in, they'd lose the only advantage they had. The door moved easily, and he breathed a sigh of relief. Sal squeezed his shoulder. Clyde froze. Sal whispered, "There's a bell." Clyde looked up and saw the bell used to announce new customers hanging on the top of the door. Another inch and it would fall off and ring in their doom. Sal stood slowly. He reached up and held the bell. "Okay, go ahead," he whispered. Clyde pushed the door farther, and Sal kept the bell from ringing. When he'd opened it enough, Clyde slid into the store and stood. He brought the submachine gun to his shoulder, his left hand gripping the vertical front grip tightly. He swept the muzzle through the aisles. Satisfied that imminent death didn't await him, he held the door for Sal. Sal released the bell carefully and stepped inside. He tapped Clyde's shoulder and pointed at a wooden doorstop in the corner. Clyde quickly grabbed it and shoved it in place beneath the door, keeping it from closing and ringing the bell. He heard murmuring voices coming from the back. A door leading to a back room bled light into the main part of the store. Keeping the machine gun pressed firmly into his shoulder, Clyde moved to the first aisle. Sal took the next aisle over. With a nod to each other, they moved toward the door. Clyde couldn't see the door as he approached, but he heard the distinct sounds of women and men quarreling. He heard Abby's voice, and he had to restrain his impulse to charge in and save her. Be smart. Be smart. He got to the end of the aisle and he smelled cigarette smoke. He heard footsteps. He crouched and peeked around the aisle. He saw a large man standing with his back to him, smoking a cigarette.
his slicked back hair and his leather coat perfectly fit Clyde's image of a mafioso thug. Quick and silent as a viper, Sal slid to the man's back, wrapped his hand around his mouth, and yanked his chin up, nearly lifting him off the ground. Clyde thought he'd snapped his neck, but his victim quickly stopped fighting when Sal whispered in his ear and pressed the machine gun's muzzle hard into his back. Clyde could hear the man trying to breathe. His eyes shifted wildly, trying to see his attacker. Clyde moved in beside the door and sighted over the submachine gun's open sights. He looked down the hallway, and the voices and light emanated from a larger room in the back. Sal whispered, "Stay behind me, but be ready." Clyde didn't want to comply. He wanted to charge in and finish this, but he saw what Sal had in mind. Hostage for hostage. Sal didn't try to be quiet. He kept a tight grip on the mobster, his weapon pressed firmly into his back and his head directly behind. He forcibly marched him down the hallway. When he reached the end of the hall, he stopped, and Clyde crouched and aimed past him. His blood ran cold. He recognized Abby and two other people sitting in chairs with hoods over their heads and their hands bound behind them. Blood soaked through the biggest person's dirty hood, and Clyde heard pathetic moans. Three men stood around them in a semicircle. It took a moment for them to notice Sal and Clyde. When they did, they turned, bringing two pistols and a pump-action shotgun to bear. Sal said, "Don't make me blow Vinny's guts all over this room." Clyde didn't take his eyes off his wife. She looked pathetic with her torn stockings and knobby knees knocking together in abject fear. His heart ached to free her. He thought he should simply pull the trigger and end this right now. He had the shot. None of them would have a chance. He held his fire, though, for fear of hitting Abby. Even a ricochet would be deadly in these tight confines. "Abby, it's me! We'll get you out of there!" "Clyde!" she screamed. "Clyde, help me!" The man holding the shotgun dropped the muzzle and gaped at Clyde. "Cooper? Clyde Cooper?" Clyde broke from his own murderous thoughts. He knew that voice. He knew that man. His jaw dropped and he gasped. "Gil? Gil Hicks?" The electricity in the room suddenly softened, as though someone had thrown a light switch. Gil aimed the muzzle at the roof, reached over and tore the hood off Abby. His eyes widened to saucers and he dropped to his knees and sobbed. "Oh, dear God. Oh, dear God. I'm so sorry." The shotgun clattered to the floor, and the other men looked at him as though he'd lost his mind. Sal kept his grip tight on his prisoner, and he raised his voice. "What's going on, Cooper?" Clyde lowered his weapon and raced the few yards to Abby. The other men brought their weapons to bear and aimed at his back as he hugged her, and they both sobbed. Gil bolted to his feet and put his body between his men and Clyde. "Don't shoot! Don't shoot! Don't you see? I know these two! Clyde's a paratrooper just like me. That's his wife, for God's sake." Sal eased his grip, but didn't drop his barrel just yet. Vincent Trambolini kept his hands up and slowly turned toward him until they faced each other. "Mr. Sarducci," he grinned. "I see you haven't lost your edge." Sal stared back at him, his face stony and unreadable. He lowered the muzzle. He finally said, "This has just been a huge misunderstanding, Mr. Trambolini." Clyde untied Abby, and they hugged fiercely. Gil pulled off the other hoods and untied Trish and Charlie. Charlie's head lolled side to side, and his nose and mouth bled onto the front of his shirt. He seemed unable to focus. Gil went to Clyde and placed an arm across his back. "I'm so sorry, Coop. I didn't know. How could I know?" Clyde turned to his friend, and a sudden rage consumed him. He punched Gil across the jaw, dropping him onto his butt. Gil rubbed his chin and worked his jaw back and forth. "Porca vacca. I guess I deserve that, paisano.